Woe be unto him who opens one of the seven gateways to hell, because through that gateway, evil will invade the world.
That'll live on, and no one will know as the years come and go of the horror from long time ago. In this little town, when the 14th comes round, there's a silence and fear in the air. Remember the morn that the legend was born, all the shock and the horror was there. For the legend, they say, on a Valentine's Day is a curse that'll live on. And no one will know as the years come and go of the horror from long time ago. And no one will know as the years come and go of the horror from long time ago.
out.
All right, guys, I'm here with the Sick on Cinema podcast, guys. They have a great podcast where they cover the completely insane and weird and bizarre cinema. It's Matt and John, if you guys want to introduce yourself. Very good podcast. If you have not listened to it, I highly recommend it.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm John. I'm one half of this shit show.
I'm Matt on the other half.
All right. And I'm bringing this giant turd together to talk about one of the most bizarre films of 1981. Kind of stands out on its own, considering there's not really that many Japanese horror. There's a lot in the katsu and erotica, but there's not much Japanese horror. If you're looking at it, you have like Island of Evil Souls is one, but Evil Spirits, but they're not exactly straight up horror. Horror doesn't really start getting like huge in the 80s until the mid 80s. So This is a bizarre one. I guess it's ahead of its time and whatever the fuck it is. The director would go on to make another film called Noisy Requiem, which is a 2.5 hour trash art epic, I guess I would call it, where it's just disgusting and nonsense. This one is definitely a precursor to that. I don't know much about the director, and I don't know if anyone really does. So I guess what's your initial thoughts on Pig Chicken Suicide?
Yeah. When Matt approached me, he was like, hey, Dave wants to talk about Pig Chicken Suicide. I was like, what the fuck is that? And after watching, I think I still had the exact same reaction. What the fuck is that?
Now, John thought about doing a joke. I'll do it. Since YouTube is not too keen on certain words, Pig Chicken Sewer Slot.
Yeah.
It fits. It really does. Because this whole movie, it's like, I don't know how you can make Japan look that gross.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Somehow this movie looks more grimy than like Begotten.
Yeah. <It's>
get Roy Frumkes and Frank Henenlotter on the phone. I got to make a movie in Japan and make it look nasty. That's what it's like.
Make it look slimy as shit.
It's like I recently watched The Beasts, and that movie's pretty grimy. And it's
that's a Hong
like,
Kong, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and that's typical for Hong Kong, right? But it's like rural Hong Kong. So
yeah.
It's like Deliverance meets I Spit on Your Grave, Hong Kong style. And yeah. The Beasts are actually just the men committing the rape. I'm a fan of it. I don't know, a lot of people don't like that movie, but I like it.
Yeah, I like it too. I think it's a very interesting one. And I've heard some like different names for it too. One that's pretty racist that I saw someone talk about online. I was like, I've never heard it called that, and they seem pretty uncomfortable bringing that up. But the reason why I bring that up, though, is because I feel like the grime of that movie is kind of similar to the grime of this one, if that makes sense. Like, not necessarily, like, in the execution of that one, but it's more of just the overwhelming, like, feel that both movies have. Like,
you know,
might be from the transfers, too.
Yeah, they're both very dirty-looking movies. The thing about The Beast is, in Hong Kong films in general, their sense of humor is much different than Japan's. And even when this movie, I think, is trying to be funny at times in a disgusting way, it's not funny. It's still just gross. While The Beast, they have the one character who, like, smells bad, and he goes to the disco, and you're like, I guess this is kind of funny. Hong Kong has never got, like, the tonal weird mood in Hong Kong cinema is just you either like it and you get used to it, or you'll be so confused by the reason why they're making a fart joke after like a violent rape. You know, it's just
yeah. It's like there's not much of a better example of that than something like Daughter of Darkness, where it's like the tonal shifts in that movie are, oh my God. You know?
I think we might have lost John a little bit. Hopefully John will pick back up on here. Oh, okay. I thought you weren't moving for a second. I was
sorry.
Like, did you freeze?
No, I was looking at 1981. I was just going through it and just kind of saying, yeah, like, this is really an outlier. It's like there's not a ton of like what you call like art house horror in this year. Like, you got Possession and stuff like that, but like this is, oh, I don't even know, is this horror? Like,
I don't know. It didn't feel like it. No Mercy, No Future is also a really dystopian, dark movie that could be considered horror. Very unpleasant. Great movie though. And I'm looking at like 1980 was riddled with animal violence because you had a lot of the cannibal films and jungle films and stuff like that. And the Hong Kong films had it. This one this year is a lot less. Like, after Cannibal Holocaust, somebody was like, hey, let's tap the brakes a little bit. This is too much. This is the ultimate whatever. We're stopping this. And this one's just like, it didn't get the memo. This guy travels to the beat of his own drum that is erratic and insane. And I mean, there's some Hong Kong films. I think Bewitched has some animal cruelty and stuff in it. But for the most part, they cut back big time, probably because Italy took a step back after the early 1980.
Yeah.
And I do feel like he's trying to say something with animal violence, but I do feel like it's lost in translation.
Yeah.
Like, when I'm watching it, I'm not picking up on the social commentary. I'm just like, this is really grisly and unpleasant. And like, the older I get, I never liked watching animal cruelty, but the more it bothers me, I feel like. I don't know. I really did not enjoy seeing those pigs get tased and then cut apart.
I think that's, is that a taser or is that the bullet, the stun gun thing that they put to the
it
head?
I don't know. It could be.
Because they do that to the cows too. They got the, what is the, poof, you know, Texas shit. That gun's no good. That gun's no good. Yeah, you got to use the old way with the sledgehammer. I don't know if they do that with pigs too, but I don't even eat pork because my rule of thumb is if I can kill it myself and probably sleep at night, I'll do it. So I'll eat poultry and stuff. But I just don't do pigs because I think they're highly intelligent. Plus the farms are fucking disgusting. I don't care what other people do. That's just my own personal moral code. I could care less. Watching it's unpleasant as shit, although it does appear to be in a slaughterhouse. So it's probably similar to what Wake and Fright, when they went on the trip there and just were like, they're just going to record the chicken stuff in this. It seems to be otherwise. And I don't really understand. I'm kind of confused on the timeline in this film. Are there flashbacks? Are they just kind of nightmarish sequences in his head? I don't even know how to basically, if you read the plot online, I guess you're like, sure, that's, I guess, what is happening. I don't.
Yeah.
Whatever you say.
Yeah. I kind of the same thing. Like, I read the plot and I'm like, is that what happened in this movie? Cause I'm not sure. Cause like this whole thing about like race and like discrimination in Japan. But like the only time that's ever really brought up is like at the very beginning and in passing, someone's like, what are you, Korean? And like that's literally the, like it. That's the only time that's ever really brought up. But I guess it's like, you know, using the imagery of the pigs and stuff like that to compare like how like the Japanese people look at the like, you know, outsiders. I don't know. I don't know if it's successfully portrayed that thematically to me. I don't really know.
The lead guy in this film, he works in the slaughterhouse. And he is obsessed with the Koreans, right? Is he the one who's watching the Korean? Are they brother and sister? Because the sign brother and sister is a sign of respect. But they are not talking to each other in a term of sign of respect. I think they actually are supposed to be an incestuous brother and sister.
I kind of got that. Yeah. That's what I thought.
Some Mike in there, some visitor Q.
Yeah, and, like, very much so.
We follow these two kids, too. And I was like, is that them? Like, yeah. That's what I was trying to figure out, like, because they don't ever interact with, like, the older versions themselves, but it feels like it's happening at the same time. There's no distinction between the two, like, stories that are kind of stories, using that very loosely. And
we also have the little girl, right? And that's the flashback, and she's the one who takes out the chicken man, right?
Yes.
Is the chicken man that guy in the past? And these kids are, it's very confusing to the point of, I don't understand. And now, is he supposed to be, at one point you think he's hungry, the lead character, when he's walking around and his stomach is grumbling, but then other times you think he's got a shit.
Dude, yeah. When it started, he's climbing that building and that sound is going on, I was like, either someone is snoring or shitting their pants. I don't know which one. And then it was like, oh, he's hungry. Never mind, it's neither.
Yeah. And of course, he's going to the rooftop, which is like Japan's answer for every low budget movie. What are we going to do? Let's get to the rooftop. Like,
go to the roof.
Sato is like, all right, do we got our 10 minutes of rooftop footage in this? No, it's like, good, because we're only at 55 minutes. We can pack 10 more minutes in this movie of just standing on the rooftop and talking.
It's like, I think, is it Brain Sex where they're just like continuously on a rooftop pretty much the entire movie?
All of them. It's almost
every Sato movie ever.
It's the same roof, too. They're like, let's just look at this shit city of technology and rape. No, but I, like, this movie baffled me. Like, I watched it and I was like, I don't know what the fuck that was.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
So I started rewatching it. And I'm still like, I don't understand this movie at all. And Noisy Requiem at least had kind of these just wacky characters coming in and out and doing horrible things. Although Noisy Requiem's not listed as a horror film. And I would say it's more of a horror film than this. And this is listed as a horror film. And I mean, like, I guess slaughterhouse footage is brutal, but is it a horror film?
Yeah. I think it plays in that, like, is it horror in that it's just, it's so uncomfortable and it's so chaotic that it creates a sense of, like, horror in that it's, like, erratic and, like, it's dreadful. But I don't, like, there's nothing in it that is distinctly, we would say, is horror.
Yeah. So that gang, the gang that's kind of not even a gang, the group. Now, like, are those cult supposed to be? Yeah. Are they supposed to be the Koreans that are in Japan as well?
That's what I was thinking. I mean, again, it doesn't give you any, like, context clues as that's what that is. But that's the only thing I could think of why they would even be in the movie. However, that's some of the best imagery of the film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially, what were you going to say, Matt?
No, I was just agreeing. Yeah, it's a great imagery.
Yeah, the imagery's good. It kind of does like negative stuff and goes black and white, and the colors saturating in and out is the most interesting thing in the whole fucking movie, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There is a great shot where, like, they're at the riverside and, like, the community or the cult or whatever they are, like, start to walk to the water, and the water, like, turns red. To me, that was, like, the most interesting, like, visual aspect of the film. What it means or what it is trying to portray, I have no clue.
Yeah. The one thing I guess I'm thinking about it, talking about it, I knew I need to have somebody that would be interested in, like, kind of extreme cinema on here to talk about this movie, is like, I'm sitting here thinking about it and I'm like, I guess this gets some credibility for being a precursor to some Takashi Miike or a direct to video extreme stuff, especially with the imagery of them wrapped up kind of looking like Slime City or the Invisible Man. Mm-hmm. It's just bizarre imagery. Maybe some of those films were the older ones from the 60s and early 70s. What's the director who does all the Shogun's Joy of Torture and stuff? I feel like maybe some of that's lifted from there, the kind of like cut off arms and stuff, but because the wrappings. But I really can't. I think this is kind of its own deal. I definitely do think that it probably inspired somebody like Takashi Miike.
I could definitely see that because it, like, talking about it, it's like it doesn't feel like it came out in 1981.
No.
Like, it feels like something that would have been made in, like, the Pinku era of, the 90s. like it, like Japanese horror, especially around this time, which there's not a lot in the '80s, but like the late '70s has a very specific feel to it. And this is completely different than that.
What is the director? What's the director? She was a female director. She made two films, Oregon and the other one, which was made in the '90s. That's really like this. It's a lot like this, but it's more comedic and much better. I think. I can't think of the title. It's a good film.
She's in Tetsu.
It is. Yeah. It's great. And I feel like it shares some DNA to this too. And I do think it's more like a precursor to Visitor Q, except something's lost in translation on this movie. And I think this guy is a madman.
Yeah. So something I'll bring up too is this movie, I don't, at least as far as I know, this has never gotten some form of official release outside of Japan. So
put it out.
I mean, I feel like there's a couple mad people out there that would do it, but it's one of those things where I do feel like when it comes to like fan subs and stuff of certain movies, like some things do get lost. So I just don't, I don't know if that's what's going on or if it's just so weird that it's just like, there's not really much sense you can make of it. Cause without subtitles or with them, this movie's essentially like, it still doesn't make any fucking sense.
Yeah, it's lost in translation for us. It's like some of those movies you go, especially like Eastern European stuff. Like I'm messing around with AI subtitles now, and my computer's older, so I don't have like the power to do the large bass on Whisper. So I'm doing just the bass like engine. So like a lot of times you'll sit there and run for 12 hours and you'll get subtitles and it'll just be like, that was not worth 12 hours of my time. That is not correct. But sometimes you get the gist of it. Other times you're just like, what the fuck am I doing with my life right now? I'm going to watch this movie with like the worst subtitles ever. Or like we're talking about fan subs, but like Lost in Translation with Hong Kong films, like bullying, like stop bullying me. It's like, you just cut this guy's head off or rape this wife. And now you're, bullying is not the same in Hong Kong.
No. What's like in Hong Kong movies, like even with like official releases, like a lot of times it's like, oh, you know, how are you doing, brother? Or how are you doing? Just stuff like that. And it's like, that's very much, you know, a translation thing too, but it reads to like someone who's not very familiar is like, why are they talking like fucking Hulk Hogan? You know, like, come here, brother. We have to go do this.
Come like, on, brother. We're going to get out of here, fatty brother. Cause they call everybody. There's always a character named Fatty. You're like, oh, this is every movie. It's like, hey, Fatty. It's like, what are we doing?
Shout out Sammo Hung.
He's the best. He's the ultimate fatty. He's not even that fat. Like in American standards, like he's in pretty good shape actually for American standards.
Like, he really is. Yeah.
Like, so
he's in better shape than me.
I mean, the dude's actually like doing all this crazy shit. I mean, he'd easily whoop my ass.
Right. It's like, yeah, I love Sammo Hung. He's so fucking good.
There's that one crazy scene where it just has the guy going off and he's like, I'm a pig killer for life. That definitely seems like something that like some hardcore band would pick up and just have it like some like pig killer for life. Like,
what's interesting is I don't know if you're familiar with the manga artist Junji Ito, but like he has a character in one of his mangas that has almost the exact same like outfit with like the band with the candles in it. Yeah. And I was like, I wonder if that was inspired by this movie or if that's just something that is kind of traditional Japanese lore kind of thing, maybe. But I don't know. I thought that was really interesting.
It's bizarre. I mean, like, for sure. There's a lot of, like, I guess, iconic imagery in the movie, but, like, to make and I just can't give this a recommend or, like, hate it. Like, a lot of really angry reviews on Letterboxd. So many. And I'm just like, I don't even. They just gut punch reaction of animal slaughtering. Like, if you guys are still eating pigs, I don't want to hear you complain about seeing a butcher shop. Like, I know that sounds shitty to say, but like, you eating them, you should see where they come from. It's not pleasant.
Yeah.
it's one of those movies that, like, when it was over, I was like, I don't know. Like, I don't know what to feel about that. I can't, like, in good faith rate this movie because I don't know what it justifies a rating of.
Agreed.
Yeah. It's also like with the animal violence in this. It's like, I don't know. I guess for me, like, seeing animal violence, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, it's fucking horrible. It's also like, I watched fucking, like, something like Earthlings when I was like 14. So it's like, not that shocking, huh?
Weird flex.
No, I'm not trying to flex. I'm just saying, like, it doesn't. It's one of those things where it's like, I don't like seeing it, but it's like, to completely just destroy a movie online because, you know, it has something you don't like in it, it's just odd.
I also don't think the animals were slaughtered for the movie, except the chicken.
No.
Yeah. I don't. I'm a little questionable on that dog, because that's a real dead dog, and I don't know if they just went to a lab or they found this dead dog and decided to incorporate in the movie like James Bell would. Like, just, hey, there's a carcass of an animal. Let's just put this in our movie, and, you know? So yeah. I'm not really sure, because this guy definitely is a do-it-yourself kind of guy. Mm-hmm. I'm not even sure what this is shot on or anything. It's obviously film of some sort, but maybe 16. Who the fuck knows?
It has such a unique look to it that I don't know if it's damage or the way it was meant to look.
I definitely think that it was meant to look in a certain way. I just, this is the problem with a lot of these movies, is we all focus as a culture on so many of the movies that there's books written on them, and then everybody wants to talk about it. And it's just like, basically you're saying everything that we said. What we really needed was probably somebody like a Japanese film expert or somebody from Japan on here to discuss it. Because all we could say is basically that it's a bizarre, disgusting, kind of interesting movie that may have inspired other things or may have just never been seen by anyone.
Yeah. It's one of those things where it's like, it's a movie that's like, you know, it could have been seen by a bunch of people and inspired a bunch of people, or it could have been, you know, something that just somehow got over here.
Yeah. Like, somebody uploaded it one day. Like, there's that dumb movie we searched for in 94 called Vampire Trailer Park. And we're like, did anyone ever see that? Like, couldn't find us. And somebody finally put it up and we got to watch it. And it was just like, oh, that's a thing. I mean, it was enjoyable, but it's just like, well, did anyone actually see this when it came out?
Yeah. I don't know. It's bizarre. Yeah. That's the best way to describe this movie. It's just fucking bizarre. Like, I don't know. Like,
it is a movie where it's like, I do want to know more about it, because I want someone who's like way smarter than I am to like sit down with me and break it down. Because, like, there's the thing you talked about with the dog where he's calling it his wife at one point.
He even humps it.
Yeah. And I'm like, well, what? Like, I'm sure that means something. I'm sure it does. But in the context of the film, I just can't, like, there's nothing that, like, makes me, like, when I read the plot synopsis on Letterboxd, I'm like, is that what this is about? Because I don't know. I didn't get that.
I also think that's similar to Noisy Requiem. I think that it's about outsiders in Japan. And I just don't know if he's partly Korean or something, or some weird thing happened to him. I know his first film is almost like a LGBTQ, like, early art film. So it's not like this. And I think it's sporadic and edited and like an art film like this. And then his last film was late, like 2008. And that looks like some sort of drama. So, like, you got these two movies sandwiched in between that are just like crazy and violent and would appeal to a completely different crowd.
Yeah.
Well, it's like looking at, like, you know, like the crew and like the credits of the movie, like, there's always a connection to Sogo Ishii for some reason. Like, they all have a hand in like Birth City and shit like that for some reason. Like, all these directors do. Like, what was it? Battle Heater. Like, that guy worked on stuff with Sogo Ishii. Fucking Tetsuya the Iron Man. Fucking Tsukamoto had something to do with fucking Sogo Ishii. It's like they all come back to him. Even this guy. It's so fucking bizarre.
So, that director, Birth City 82, or is that 1980?
Yeah,
I think Birth City is 82. And then we got, he also worked on Crazy Thunder Road, right?
Yeah.
That's 1980. So this guy, that guy was pretty much the birth of the kind of crazy, you know, body, weird steampunk kind of bullshit in Japan, like that inspired Tsukamoto, but also that was Cronenberg involved with that too, with the Videodrome. So it's kind of like a weird mixture of all that kind of stuff, right? I mean, and this guy, 81, it's weird because he doesn't fit like into the body horror kind of weird transformation, cyberpunk kind of thing, what I'm looking for. But he definitely had to have some sort of influence on just to kind of do it yourself stuff. If we look before, I mean, we do have some body horror, like I said, in the torture and kind of like the stories that they have of, you know, the woman who had her arms and legs chopped off the man. That's an old kind of classic story that they tell in Rambo Noir, right? Mm-hmm. And I know it's been done numerous times, I'm sure of it. But it's just kind of a bizarre history of that kind of stuff until we add in the cyberpunk element, which is not in this movie, really. But you mentioned Burst City and Crazy Thunder Road kind of has, I guess, aesthetically, that kind of thing going on, too. So strange film. I really can't compare it to anything else this year. It's not really like anything else this year at all. It stands alone.
There's not many things like it in general.
Yeah, there's not much I've seen that's like this movie at all.
Noisy Requiem is very much a more polished version.
Yeah, I have that one and his earlier film. I think it's Rusty Empty Can.
Yeah, that's I think the gay-oriented one.
Yeah, I have both of those, and I'm curious to watch it. But at the same time, after watching this one, I am a bit like hesitant. Where I'm like, yeah, this is a lot.
It is a lot. I actually think that Noisy Requiem is a bit more disturbing and just grosser. There's not as much. I don't think there's animal violence, but it's 2.5 hours long. It's more easy to follow. And there's just a lot more. I think actually the small person in this one is also in Noisy Requiem. I think he plays a bigger character, different character maybe. But I just, similar plot, but it's just like kind of the underbelly of a fucking city. This one has a rural feeling, I'd say, more than a city. It definitely a smaller village type. So I don't know if I can wholeheartedly recommend Pig Chicken Suicide. The title definitely has a name like Cannibal Holocaust. You're like, what the fuck is that? If you don't know what it is. It's definitely one of those titles that the lady in Bloodletting, when she sees the movie collection, she's like, guinea pig, cock-sucking toddlers? What are these?
Yes.
Hey, Pig Chicken Suicide could definitely be one of those movies.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it, like, Matt like pitched it to me. I was like, is this like a Vos de Noche kind of thing? Like, what are we about to watch? Like,
what is this? I mean, I haven't seen Vos de Noche, but it doesn't seem the most far off.
Actually, no.
I have that old DVD that was supposed to, and I never got a chance to watch it. It's also, if anybody doesn't know, Wedding Thrill and Pig Fucking Movie.
Yeah,
that's the title that most people probably know it by and have jerked off to.
So, I just don't know what else to like. Try to go with from this movie. Like, I like trying to think of like things to talk about, like about the movie that like kind of makes sense of it. Just in a way seems pointless, you know. I just don't know. I don't know where to go from here with the movie itself.
It is a movie that's more of an experience than anything else. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a film that you're even supposed to watch to get like some kind of like traditional enjoyment out of. It's just meant to be experienced and like just kind of let it. You like just live in that world for a little bit because it plays very much like things just kind of happen. So it's like not necessarily like you're meant to be like trying to follow it, I don't think.
I know somebody can break it down and be like, see that he called the dog his wife because he sees his own people as animals. And they could break it down to the point, but like that's a fine line between bullshit and art and imagery and all that kind of stuff. Like there's like, kind of, you can either have like bullshit art or just like complete nonsense. Like it is a mixture of insanity, art, and bullshit, and like where people lay. You know what I mean? Like David Lynch is clearly doing something in his own mind and artful, but he's a little crazy. And then like some people are just completely insane. Like you're just like, this guy's so off that like you're not going to find any real symbolism for a regular human being.
Yes, right. Sir.
And it's like, I feel like it is a movie that like you'll have like three camps with it. People are either going to be like, this is utter garbage and shouldn't exist. People like us who are like, I don't know what to think about it. And people are like, this is an absolute masterpiece.
Yeah.
One of the greatest movies ever. Cause it has just that feeling to it, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Like I'm almost tempted just to go down and just because like, I feel like I'm skipping people out. But yeah, there's all the reviews I'm looking at here. You know what I mean? Like you have some that are positive and some that are negative. And a positive one here is your friend, Herschel Gillis, right?
Yeah.
Hey, he loves it. Truly insane cinema. artistic, weird, and disturbing to equal measure, the film equivalent of a drug trip. Not a good one. Not a good drug trip, I'll tell you that. That'd
no.
Be a bad acid trip,
it's one
man.
That involves a man who's a chicken. I guess he's a chicken. He's the weirdest chicken I've ever seen in my life. He's black. You know, like, why'd they do that to him?
I don't understand. He's, like, not even good enough to be in the background of Poultry Guy. He says, like, one of the chicken dead.
Yeah. He's got, like, a paper beak.
You take the beak off and it's, like, just racist.
That's just, like, Japan's, like, answer to, like, when they used to give you a Burger King crown at a fast food restaurant. They used to give you, like, a fake chicken beak. You're a chicken.
Look around a little bit.
This guy's review is very long, and he is very not happy.
He's pissed.
Yeah, I don't even know if I want to read this guy's review, because I feel like I will just butcher it. But yeah, never want to see this again. There are many things I'd rather do before being subjected to artistic trash again. Enlist in the army, drive crates of nitroglycerin along a bumpy road. It's got to be a shout out to the sorcerer. Watch Blade Runner, actually bearable stuff. I actually hated this. Torture through and through. To be frank, the visuals are atrocious. Low budget underground filmmaking does not give you a pass to film like a nitwit. It looks like some low budget quality 70s TV commercial, constantly irritating for 90 straight minutes. And then comes the actual content. Probably even worse. How Matsu, I can't say that guy's name. What'd you say? Matsu? Yui was ever encouraged to make more films is beyond me. Two images spliced together is not that simple. You actually have to have skill and craft to do it correctly. Instead, the result is a decrepit, pretentious college of shit, figuratively and literally. If you directed by a pretentious 13-year-old, it could pass as mediocre first attempt, but by an adult, for shame. Pig Chicken Suicide comes off so poorly, it hardly has a narrative. And what narrative is there? Tries so hard to be avant-garde, yet failing miserably. It attempts to speak volumes of disenfranchisement. I can't say that word right now. Disenfranchisement. I want to add another mint to it. But better has been made in that regard. Throw away your books. Rally in the Street should be the gold standard for films about disenfranchisement. It's an artistic absurdity is on point. The director tries to do the same, but the absurdity is amateurish and not subtle. And the disenfranchised remains to be unsympathetic throughout the film's terrible protagonist. If it had
not
to be
subtle
again, I would want.
What about this movie's on the nose?
I don't know.
Like,
I have no idea.
He's like, oh, it's, you know, it's so on the nose. Explain it then. Explain what's on the nose then.
That he brings up the lead guy, because, like, I would agree with that. He is unlikable, but I think he's supposed to be.
Nobody in this movie is likable.
Yeah.
No.
They're not developed enough to be likable.
He eats shit off his shoe, like, literally.
No.
You know, like,
yeah.
I don't know.
Forgot about that.
Yeah, everything about the movie is unpleasant. So, like, I just don't even know where to grasp it. And like, it's so hard to follow that at points you just kind of check out. There's no doubt that you check out during this movie. Like, if they gave you the Clockwork Orange treatment, you would be very fucking unhappy watching.
I don't. It's The guy's review is like not completely wrong in instances, but I don't know. I think there's more merit to it than what he wants to give it credit for.
Hmm.
But at the same time, he brings up good points.
I definitely think he does bring up good points, but it is like, I don't know, like for him to be like, you know, like, oh, it's so on the nose and not like, you know, blah, 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 blah. It's like, that's an awfully brave statement for this movie.
I mean, I guess you could look at it as kind of your classic kind of mentally unstable person that society has kind of thrown away, like the Joker or Taxi Driver. And look at it that way in the eyes of a Japanese movie, and he works in a slaughterhouse, and he watches animals killed all day. He's kind of your on my way to be a serial killer kind of character, far past being disenfranchised, honestly.
Yeah.
This guy's mind doesn't work to the point of disenfranchised. It works to the point of just insane.
Well, it's like at one point, like I'm pretty sure like it's definitely someone he knows. I'm pretty sure it's the character from earlier, but he's definitely like sneaks up onto her balcony and like is like watching her while like masturbating, and then he of course falls off and nearly breaks his shit, but it's like, yeah, that's some creepy fucking behavior, but I just don't know, like, if that's trying to say something about, like, anything, or if that's just there to be, you know, not shock value, but that's not the word I'm looking for. It's just there to look at, you know, just the I don't know.
I guess you could kind of say that symbolically he feels like just wet gutter trash. And at the end of the movie, he's just laying there as such, kind of as mm-hmm. he feels he deserves and what he is. The person said, I think it might be a female. I'm not really sure, but they say that it's right on the nose, but I don't know if this director is capable of doing something on the nose, because I don't think they know what where the nose is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does feel at times where it's like the director was just like, I got a really odd, cool idea for a scene. Let's shoot it. Where does it fit in the movie? Well, I don't fucking know. We'll figure it out. You know,
who cares?
Like, yeah. We'll make it work.
So I'd probably come on the middle. I'd have to rate this. Come on the middle. That sounds terrible. But I'd probably come on the middle with a cake. So you all have to eat it. But I'm just, it's the new cake farts. It's cum cakes.
Oh God, no.
So I would just rate this somewhere in the middle. Like, I just give it a 5 just because I don't know. I have no opinion of it. I'm way too hard, like, pressed to. Maybe I'm not smart enough to develop opinion, but I don't know.
My small southern brain can't comprehend these crazy movies.
You know, we need somebody to hold my hand here to bring me through, like, an expert on these films. But I think that if it was an American film, we could understand it a bit more. You know, culturally, there's some missing pieces.
Like, it's funny because, like, me and John were joking around off air, you know, before we were recording. We're like, man, it's like, I hope Dave, you know, he understands, you know, a lot about the movie, because we sure didn't. like, I'm pretty sure John was like, I hope he's got his damn working boots on, because I don't know.
You ready to carry our fat ass?
I leave my work boots at my job. I don't bring them home with me. I'm trying to relax. I put in Pig Chicken Suicide, and I'm like, and I'm used to watching like even like Dutch fucking art films, and I'm like, I think I got what this movie's saying. I'm watching Pig Chicken Suicide. I'm like, I don't know. But it's hard to follow too. So it's not like I'm like this, like hyper focused with like a notepad. Like, okay, character falls. Well, it means that he's falling from regular society. I'm like, I barely care. Like, I know it sounds shitty, but it's so inept that at certain points you're like, I have a hard time giving a shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it looks like shit because it's like on a VHS rip. So that's a problem too. Like, quality is a problem sometimes, unless it's super intriguing. And context is also something that should be taken into consideration when you're watching something from the early 80s that hasn't had anybody talk about it. So, and then again, that kind of makes me question my own intelligence, because it's like, did somebody hold my hand through 90% of the movies I like and then help me develop my opinions over time? Or, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel that. It is kind of like, do I like this movie because someone explained it to me, or do I like it because I like it, kind of thing?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I don't know. Or do I think I understand it because someone else has explained it in detail? I don't know.
I feel like there's a lot of directors you just connect with. Like, I've always connected with Romero. I feel like I've always got Romero. Like, just on, you know, I'm American. I'm from that kind of geographical location. So it's like, I get these. I understand them. And then, like, over time, they were reinforced by smarter people than myself. And then I kind of developed my own ideas based off theirs and my own. And I was just like, I got it. I like it. It's interesting. Some people are harder to grasp, especially depending on your mindset and where you're from and what country and the time you grew up in. You know, like, that's why a lot of people don't connect with new movies or old movies. They just don't understand them.
Yeah, for sure. I will say it is interesting too, because it's like, we're in the throes of Halloween, we're in the spooky months, we'll be watching Pig Chicken Suicide. Ain't nothing more spooky than that. the Halloween spirit.
I can't say that's not like too off brand for us. But...
So we're looking at 81 as a whole. I mean, what are some of your guys' favorite movies from the year?
I had to pull it up because I'm not as good as yours.
Yeah.
But definitely Possession. That's one for sure.
Mm-hmm. It's one of my all-time favorite movies. It's a movie I've seen once, but I fucking adore it.
Yeah, that's an art film that's a little easier to follow than Pig Chicken Suicide. And also, it's just much better made.
Yeah. I really want to see more stuff from that guy, but I missed that on that box set.
What, is it out of print, the Eureka box set?
I can't find it like anywhere right now. It could just be coming back. Eureka?
Not
yet, I need to, bro.
Go for it. They have free shipping to the States on anything, if you order one title.
That's fucking amazing.
Yeah, I did not know that. Holy shit.
I got it for $50. All three movies shipped to me from them.
Damn.
Oh, wow. So I'm about to go fucking broke. Because they got a lot of shit I want.
It's a fucking banger of a Euro. Like, as I go through it, like The Beyond.
Three Fulcis.
Fucking... The Burning, which I just rewatched, which I think is a really good slasher with some terrible editing and fucking like scene layout.
I love The Burning, but it's been a while since I've watched it, so I'll rewatch it and just be like, I doubt it, but
it is great, but there's just times where I'm like, the angle of this just doesn't make fucking sense. Like, is Cropsy like standing off camera with the shears under the covers and this dude just can't see him? Or is he laying down and somehow like kips up Shawn Michaels style to his feet? Like,
he's just like a camouflage expert. Like, he's just like a boulder, and then like, cause he can't realize he's all fucking burned. He pops up.
It's crazy to look at like 81, like from when like, you know, Friday the 13th come out to how many slashers.
Oh,
in 81, like if they just pop the fuck off.
Oh yeah.
Dude, there's so many birthday movies. Everybody's got a fucking birthday in 81. Allison's birthday. Happy birthday to me. Madhouse has a birthday. A bloody birthday. It's like event horror, man, because of Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. Friday 13th. We got to have events in these horror movies. What's going on? Any stupid fucking holiday or event is a horror movie now.
Happy birthday to me is 81.
Huh?
Happy birthday to me is 81. Yeah. Yeah, that's a fucking great fucking movie.
That's underrated. Happy Birthday to Me is underrated as far as like if you're talking slasher. It's got to be top 10, like 80 slashers, I think.
Standard ones. It's fucking awesome. I recently got the Kino Blu-ray of that.
It's a great one.
I've been meaning to check that transfer out because I've only seen the DVD.
One of Matt's favorite movies, Dragala, came out in 1981.
Wolf?
Yeah. Wolf.
The Indonesian Friday the 13th, folks.
That movie is...
It's okay.
Yeah.
With a long K.
Yeah. It's got like 15 Ks after the O.
Indonesia's weird, man. Their films were very bizarre at the time.
Yeah. It's like even like... India was starting to pop off with their fucking crazy shit.
The weirdest, it has the three weirdest remakes ever in 1 year. So you have the Friday 13th remake and Wolf or Striglala, whatever you call it. And then you have the Rocky Horror Picture Show from Egypt, Fangs, India.
Oh my God.
And then you have a legitimate Let Sleeping Corpses Lie remake from South Korea in The Monstrous Corpse, which is legitimately a remake of Let Sleeping Corpses Lie.
Holy shit.
Who thought there would ever be a remake? And they're all like bizarre. Let's Sleeping Corpses Lie remake's pretty good. And Fangs is fun, but of course it's too long, like any kind of Bollywood movie is.
Yeah. It's like I watched Mahakal not too long ago. And that movie, like, it's fun, but it is so long for what it is.
The Michael Jackson shit. It's so stupid.
What the fuck? What is
How that? They not get sued? Like, he's like, come on, comes out. I was like, what are we doing here? This is like 5 minutes of this guy in a Michael Jackson jacket in a cafeteria, and he's like 43 dancing. He's like, he's clearly like a some sort of comedian from India that's funny. But when we're watching it, we're like, I don't know who that is. Like, that'd be like some country popping in and seeing like Abbott Costello, and none of the comedy transfers, and they're just watching them like, and they're just like, who's this? Who are these fucking idiots?
Who are these fucking goobers there in this movie?
Oh, ever dubbed the Three Stooges for other countries?
Like, I'm sure they have, right?
I
want
to watch dub Three Stooges within the...
What's like? I know they dubbed like SpongeBob episodes for other places, and one of the discs I had back in the day had those dubs on it. And like, I think it was like the Russian dub. It was like so fucking ridiculous. Like, Mr. Krabs sounded like a fucking demon.
Dude, there is a hilarious, you know, the Russian version of Winnie the Pooh. Look it up on YouTube. The animation is so bizarre, but the Russian poo, when he's like, Yor! He looks like shit. His head is this big, and he's like all choppy. It's the funniest fucking thing. I was like, Yor!
It's also funny, like, we're talking about, like fan subs and stuff earlier, too. Like, I have a movie from Turkey called Execution, also known as Idomlik. And that translation is fucked. Like, they're like, I have to save these kids from this horrible world.
It's just dialogue from Strike Commando.
Oh, the popcorn!
We got candy in the trees. And
Strike Commando is literally a movie. I had to talk John off the ledge from giving it five.
I was going to. I was giving it perfect rating, baby.
American ASCII.
I fucking love Strike Commando. It's nonsense. So fun.
I saw Red Brown at Cinema Wasteland 1 year, and like, I regret not getting his autograph.
Yeah,
like,
right.
He's fucking enormous, like, still wide. Like, I was walking down like one of the things, and like, he was coming, and I was just like, oh, I moved to the side, and I was like, game wave. He was like, he looked like the super nicest guy ever. I was like, fuck, that was a regret. So many regrets not getting autographs now when they were like $20 a piece. Now like, I'm $178 for a picture and $368 for an autograph. And if you want to do like a photo op of me dressed in my outfit, we'll take a second mortgage out on your house.
I went to get an autograph for one of my friends because like I won't say names, just, you know, to be on the safe side, I guess.
It ain't their fault. It's their agent's fault.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. Well, it was the guy who played Trevor in GTA 5. I don't know if you... Yeah, well. He's been, like, Walking Dead, stuff like that, too. But I was going to get his autograph for a friend of mine, and it was, like, $50 for the autograph, which I was like, okay. And then, like, we were going to take a picture, and his agent was like, no, you got to pay for that first. And the guy was like, what the fuck? Okay. And I was like, well, I'll just take the autograph and I'll leave. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, the agent was a fucking dick. But, I mean, that's kind of how things are, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, the bubble's going to burst on everything pretty soon. Like, everything's getting so expensive and insane. People are just going to stop giving a fuck. They're just gonna be like, I'm not doing this. And they're going to be like, what? Like, there's so many people that I would have got an autograph like 10 years ago just to talk to them and give them money and just say, I love your work. I don't even give a fuck about the autograph. I just want to talk to them and give them some like show support. But I'm not going to go up and talk to them for $75 and show support.
Yeah.
Right. And again,
I can't do it.
Like, it's funny. Too. Sorry, Matt. Go ahead.
No. It's funny too. Like, again, like, if, like FrankenCon this year, we met Donald Farmer, John's favorite director. And he didn't even charge, like, for an autograph. He didn't even charge anything.
Yeah, he didn't charge me either back in the day.
I felt guilty shitting on him because he was just so nice. And then Herschel made me watch Shark Exorcist, and I was back to like, nah, fuck him.
I don't want to badmouth Donald. He's a super nice guy. I mean, he is like, a nice guy. And he's got one of those deals where there's a lot of indie directors like that their old movies were better. And as they progress, they get worse. And it's just, it's either budget, but like, they don't really grow. Like, and it's strange. Like, and I think it's mostly budget and just the way films are made. But it's not like, you know, even if you look at old directors like Romero, like, yes, like Martin is a better made film than Night of the Living Dead. And Dawn's better than, you know, they're bigger. They're changing things. And then towards the end of their career, the everything changes so much that they can't make movies. They're not getting the money they used to get. But like, there's certain directors that just never get better. Like, I hate to say this, Ryan Nicholson was peaked out in the beginning. Gutterballs is the best thing he ever made. Hanger was pretty good. Live Feed is okay. And then by the time he gets to Collard and Famine, you're just like, I don't like these anymore. So it's just a strange thing, and it's got to be budget, because he probably put more money into the earlier ones and time, or it's just the lack of giving a fuck. I don't know. Or just like Donald Farmer's later movies, just the way they're made, they're just not, like, they're not good to me. I don't like them, and I hate saying it. It's just not for me.
Well, it's like, I was watching a lot of his like shot on video stuff, like Campbell Hooker. So I think Campbell Hooker is like really fun. And then watching something like Debbie Does Demons, which I did pay for, Yeah, I bought that fucking slipcover.
Bought that over Irreversible.
Yeah, I did. That was one of the biggest mistakes of my life. And yeah, it's not great. And it definitely, it's almost like he like devolved a bit. I don't know.
You get so many guys now too. It's like they're from that era. Who like I won't, and again I won't like shit on companies too much, but like, you know, they get them to come in and start making Amityville movies and Bigfoot movies, and you know, and it's just like, I don't know, there's probably no passion in it, you know, they probably don't. It's like, ah, I'm getting paid, whatever, fuck it, you know, like,
yeah. I don't even know if they're making that much money off it, but then I think that the return, like, they don't pay these guys what they used to get paid for. Like, if let's say you make a movie in like the 80s or even the early 90s, it's going to be in the video store, and like, yeah, it costs 10 grand, I'm guaranteed 15, or it costs 50 grand, I'm guaranteed 100, whatever. Yeah. Now they're like, I'm guaranteed 2 grand, I'm making this for $500 and no one's getting paid. So the movies get shittier, they get faster turnaround, like David Sterling movies. Like, he probably has so many movies that only cost $500, but he's guaranteed $3 grand on each movie return or something like that, or maybe more, who knows. I the numbers could be all over the place, but I know that guys that make a movie for like $5 grand, Amityville something, are guaranteed probably in Redbox or Wild Eye releasing, yep, or something, and pay up front, or and then the streaming, they make the money off streaming in a year. So whatever, like Dustin Ferguson, his movies look unwatchable, I'm not gonna watch him. He's making 50 movies a year, and if he only makes $1,000 on each movie and each movie costs $500, do the math. Making, yep, $25,000 a year, $50,000 a year, or whatever.
The only man making 50 movies a year that I want to watch is Jess Franco.
And he's still making them. In heaven or hell, wherever Franco is, when you die, you're going to get there and be like, oh, this Jess Franco library up here is way bigger than it is in the States. There's 10,000 movies. Yeah. He's like, Jess, we don't know how to explain this to you. You don't have to make 3 movies at one time. We have unlimited budget here. He's like, I just hate being wasteful.
Yeah, like I've been watching a lot of his stuff recently, and it's like super fascinating, like how his turnaround was fucking ridiculous.
You like sign on for 1 Franco movie, and before you realize, you're like, I did 12 Jess Franco movies, I only remember making 2 with him.
Oh, talking about like the budget thing and like directors like decline with it, but like probably still like doing it for the profit. It makes me think of like Uwe LaMail, who like for years I was like, Uwe LaMail is the worst director that's ever lived. The dude's the worst. But then you go back and watch something like Tenderness of Wolves, like, no, excellent, the dude had chops. Like, the dude was actually a really good director. It's just like he got that deal with Lionsgate to work on these serial killer movies that are going to be in Blockbuster at the time. They're going to be everywhere. He's, you know, you can't blame him, but they were shit, beyond
shit. The worst movies ever. Like, yeah, the worst. Like, and like, I remember renting and watching part of that, and I returned it. I was like, this is the worst film I've ever seen. And they're like, go pick a free one.
I knew, oh, it's like, Uwe LaMail, like, oh,
they didn't even argue with me. They didn't even argue. They said, go get a free one. Because I like rented 2 of the worst movies I ever seen. I was like, these are unwatchable. I watched like 25 minutes of that's like before you realize that they could put like real garbage in the video store again, like in the early like 2000s. Like, these aren't even movies again. Like, yeah, what are we doing? These make SOV look like fucking Spielberg. But
Birdemic Hot Beat.
Yeah, like Uwe LaMail had a good like early career. I mean, he got Fassbinder produced his early films. So like, holy fucking shit, you know, Werner Fassbinder, Reindeer, whatever. So like, he produced Tenderness of the Wolves, which is an excellent movie.
Yeah,
that's one of the better serial killer movies ever made, based on the Fritz Harman, really disturbing serial killer. And then he made Devonsville Tear, and which I like, and The Boogeyman, which is not great, but at least watchable, has some cool shit in it. Mm-hmm. And what was the other one? Prazi, which I've never seen, which is probably okay until he gets to a certain point when, I don't know, there's got to be a breaking point where it's just stop giving a fuck, right?
Yeah. Which, it sucks when you see that happen, though, where it's like, oh, you know, this guy has so much, you know, potential, and then it's just like, I don't give a fuck anymore. It's like, oh, damn. You know?
Guys, though, that it's not even their fault. Like, everything just, like, Dario, I don't ever think it was his fault. I literally think it was how they were making movies in Italy at the time, and like, his crew was just dog shit. Like, I literally think if those movies would have been made better by a better crew, or they had the more money, they would have been fine. But like, with the CGI and like the speaking and making foreign actors speak English, and just the acting, everything was just a mess. And then like, we saw with his last movie, that dude still got it. That was a good movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like they never lose the talent. It's just like they just lose the will and the backing. You know, like
I do think some of them lose the talent. Dario wasn't the guy who lost talent, I don't think. But you're only as good as your crew, too. I mean, Romero, sure. I think, and Dario are in the same boat. I just think they changed the way they were making movies and couldn't make them the way they used to. So they didn't have the support they used to and shit. So their movies just suffered from it.
Yeah.
Depressing.
Very depressing conversation.
And then guys like Joe D'Amato and Jess Franco just didn't have any money, and they just refused to and John Roland just refused to stop making movies. So like they're like, we're making a movie this weekend, what's it about? It's like SOV, and it's just a surreal nightmare of a vampire. That's Jess Franco. It's like his SOV stuff, and later it's just like, this is inept, this isn't a movie. This is like a student film by like a 15-year-old kid with his dick in his hand. I don't know what's happening.
I haven't seen his like shot on video stuff, and I'm terrified of that.
I only saw one, and I was like, Jess, what happened?
Like, you're better than this, man.
Yeah.
Please don't do this to me.
Yeah, so as a whole, 1981 is a super interesting year. Like I said, there's a lot of similarities popping up, like birthdays, event horror, slashers, Italian horror still going strong. You got a lot of directors continuing their line of work, like not even just the big guys. Like so many of them just were working consistently through the 80s. Like even Spanish guys like Eugenio Martin and Jose Larraz and who is the guy I'm thinking? Paul Naschy had another one. And geez, Eugenio Martin, Jose Larraz, Juan Piquer Salmon. They all had movies in 81, which is weird. They're not all perfect. They're not all great. They're not all memorable. But then even guys like Romero and Carpenter took a step back and made like horror Jason movies. So like everybody was still consistently working. So it's a very interesting year.
Yeah. It's because like not 1980 itself is like kind of like the, like I would say almost like a beginning of another horror boom in a sense where like everything was being made.
Yeah.
It's very much a transition, right? Like,
yeah.
Literally and figuratively.
What was that?
Like, it said 1980 is like a transition, literally and figuratively, between like what the 70s was to what the 80s are going to be.
Yeah.
There was still some, like, even in 81, there's still some remnants of that, like, 70s style exploitation stuff with, like, Cannibal Ferox. But, like, you're starting to move a lot more into, like, the gory, effects driven slashers. Funner stuff, you know, it's starting to move that way to what we would get for the remainder of the 80s.
Yeah. So, and then when we get, by the time we get to The Thing, like we're special effects extravaganza in 82 and Poltergeist, those movies in Halloween 3, they just kind of moving over a little bit more, Basket Case. So like literally you could see the comedy and the big special effects coming in there too. But like I said, the stain of what we said from the late 70s and 1980, we still had like, you know, Alien and Dawn of the Dead and Zombie all over the place. And they're still there. I mean, we have Burial Ground this year. So like, but then we also have the huge werewolf thing. We have not just the two big ones, but we have movies that have like werewolf similar vibes, like wolf adjacent, I will say. Like we have the Wolf of Time, which is a kind of subtle werewolf film, and Night of the Werewolf by Naschy, and all sorts of things like that. Of course, everyone's favorite Larry Cohen movie, Full Moon High, which is and then we also have the Student Bodies, which is a really stupid, very funny movie. So it's like we're getting into comedy too more.
Yeah,
very much. It's crazy to think that like what is, you know, kind of known as like the two best werewolf movies of all time, both came out in 1981.
No, I'm going to take some crap for this. I love American Werewolf in London. I like The Howling too, but I watched that Night of the Werewolf movie. It was really good. So I'm like, the Paul Naschy one, like, so I'm like, is that better than The Howling for me? Like, I don't think it's better. But it's like, did I enjoy watching it more? You know?
Yeah, thing is, like, I've seen like a couple of Paul Naschy's movies, and he's fucking excellent. So I mean,
I love later Paul Naschy where he's like still trying to be just Paul Naschy. So he's getting with like the younger chicks, and like he's the badass, and like
he's wearing hair pieces and shit. Like,
yeah,
he's
so like, good.
He still looks strong as shit, though. I mean, he was a power lifter. Like, he's usually a solid looking guy, but he still took care of himself. But he's just like, I don't know what it is. Like, I know it's got to be some ego, but I never like pegged Paul Naschy as like some egomaniac or anything like that. He just loved movies. He loved horror movies, and he was one of the only guys still making them like that.
Right. Yeah. 1981 though is like like I don't have it sitting in front of me so I can like go through it or anything, but it is like an insane fucking year for horror movies.
Yeah. Raimi's debut too.
Yes, I'm saying.
Oh yeah.
You got a lot of the quote unquote masters of horror with Raimi and Landis and Cronenberg and Dante and Hooper.
Yeah. And Hooper's movie is underrated from that year. Big time. Funhouse is an underrated movie.
Funhouse is like a slasher on meth.
Is that just Toby Hooper's career?
Kind of, yeah.
On meth.
Yeah.
Why is everyone screaming? Did you see the director's name? Oh, never mind.
It's like we recently rewatched Texas Chainsaw 2. That movie is so fucking insane.
I am the like, Lord of the Harvest.
The Lord of the Harvest.
What is that? Some kind of health food joint?
Dennis Hopper is so great in that movie.
Oh, my God. He's so good.
That's one of our peppercorns. Just review Texas Chainsaw 2 right now.
I mean, we could.
It's the best.
Probably cut off memory. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like I said, it's so amazing to look at the plethora of movies here. And like I said, 1980, I think was had a little bit more variety, mm-hmm. but 81, I think 80 is going to be hard for me to top as I'm going to do the whole 80s and then I'll probably do the 70s, but I don't know if I'll ever top 1980. Honestly,
80 is pretty amazing. I mean,
yeah,
my 87, 88 are really crazy.
They're
too.
Pretty fucking good too. Yeah.
Well, it's like when you started going through the 80s, me and John were going through like, you know, Letterboxd and stuff, looking at movies that came out in 1980. And we were like, fuck.
Yeah,
this
it's a hard year.
Yeah, it's like, you know, Campbell Holocaust and fucking The Shining and all kinds of fucking amazing fucking movies came out that year. And some some underrated ones too, like what, like Without Warning and et cetera. And like it's fucking incredible year. So
if Without Warning came out in any year in the 90s or the 2000s, it would be your top three favorite movies of that year.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even make my top 25 of 1980.
Crazy.
It's probably like number like 26, 27, but that's insane to think, right?
Yeah, because Without Warning, like it's a great fucking movie.
It's a
blast. 1980 is packed full of amazing movies from around the world too.
Yeah, that's the thing about the early 80s is you still had like those old Hollywood guys, and they worked until they fucking died, and a lot of them were starting to drop over in the 80s. So I mean, like if you watch like Without Warning, you're like, this movie is riddled with these guys. I mean, Jack Palance and Martin Landau and Ralph Meeker's in there, Neville Brand, and just like. Even 5 seconds at Cameron Mitchell, 5 seconds of these guys is excellent. But then you're starting to see like the mixture come in of the newer actors. Like it's fucking David Caruso in there. So like it's a really good like old meets new big time. And I'm a sucker for actors. Like I'll like a movie if one actor I love from the years has like that movie with Cameron Mitchell, like where he's basically The Nightmare Never Ends, which is The Catalyst. It's not a great movie, but Cameron Mitchell's good in it. And he's just like, that's like me. It's like, I like this only for Cameron Mitchell and Richard Mole.
And of course, all of our favorite, like, favorite character actor of all time, Buck Flowers, is in fucking everything from the 80s.
Yeah, I just watched one with Buck Flower from 1981 called Early Warning, which is not a great movie, which is a religious kind of horror movie about the end of the world. The second from that year, honestly, which is exactly the same. And they both have a moment in the movie where they're like, the Antichrist in the movie has like, we're going to get these tattoos and you have to get this. And it's literally a 666. And I'm like, are we going to be this on the nose? That's on the fucking nose.
Oh yeah.
It's embarrassingly on the nose. But I mean, at this point, I think that people will be too stupid to even register that this guy was the Antichrist nowadays. They'd be like, well, he's just doing his own thing. 666 doesn't mean that anymore. Like, you know, people are. But, and there's always just the contrarian, right? Like,
what was the other one to come out that year?
Geez, what was it called? It was better. It was a little bit better. I just watched that last week. It was the end of the world one. I can't even remember who's in it. It has the sheriff in it. Years of the Beast. Early Warning. They're basically both religious end of the world kind of things. And Buck Flower plays like a survivalist that captures him. He's like, you gotta come to my camp.
What's,
and then 80s in the fog. So
Oh yeah. Oh my God. Yeah.
Ain't no fog bag out there.
Yeah. I know you was happily married. Not then happily married.
It's like no, there's also was it a Day of Judgment? Was that the 80s?
That's another that religious earlier? Horror movie from 81. Yeah, but that one's more of a horror film, not the kind of like religious basically descend to heaven kind of thing. Day of Judgment is kind of like your that's way regional too. The other two are both TV movies, one based off a book. That one's just like regional, like what the fuck is this? Like that movie could have been lost forever. Like no one ever saw that thing.
Yeah.
That's like the kind of movie where the director drives to the fucking video store himself. It's like, do you want to buy my movie and put it on your shelf? It's a good movie. He's like, just fucking give him the hitchhiker speech. It's a good movie, man.
Dude, it's a good movie. It's a good picture.
He starts cutting him with the plastic tape. He's cutting himself.
Takes a picture of the clerk and blows it up.
He's just got stigmata on his hands because it's a religious movie. He's like, it's a good movie.
You should do it.
You see me crucify myself? Hang on.
Hold on. Give me that nail right there. Yeah, so it's a weird fucking year, man. I'm already at 140 movies, and I haven't even rewatched most of the like heavy hitters. There's like 20 heavy hitters, and then a bunch of garbage I'm like fucking doing AI subtitles on that's not going to make a lick of sense to me. But I'm going to try anyways. I still got the Indian version of Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde.
Oh fuck me!
Oh fuck!
There's gonna be a dance sequence in there. He's like dancing and shit. Wait a minute! This is just Nutty Professor.
It's like I found an Indian movie. It's essentially Child's Play. Like what the? I don't remember the name of it, but it looks fucking ridiculous. It doesn't have subtitles though. And I was like, what the fuck is this?
I want to watch the whole entire miniseries of Indian Pennywise It.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, how bad would that be?
Oh, fuck. Can you imagine how long that would be?
I would only watch it if Homie the Clown was Pennywise.
Homie the Clown. Fuck, man.
So we're talking about Indian films. I'm getting in here. I watched a couple from this year. Hotel. Which is not, it's pretty good if you can stand 2 hours and 19 minutes. I enjoyed it though, but it's basically like a haunted hotel, and it's not like, I guess it's like maybe a rip of The Shining or The Beyond, but it's just like this haunted hotel, but it's Indian style. And all these people basically fuck over this priest. And like he owns this property and they're like, hey, we're going to build an orphanage. Sell us this plot where the cemetery's on. So there's like, he has like five or six people lie to him and all these lawyers and people like fucking with them. And then they literally just build like a hotel on it and lie to the priest. And when he sees they're building a hotel, he drops dead of a heart attack.
Oh my God.
All like the ghost zombies start haunting the hotel. And like, there's like 45 minutes of like nothing horror until like basically they start getting picked off and everything. But it was fun. I enjoyed it.
That sounds really fucking fun.
Yeah, and there's this weird comedy subplot in there for no fucking reason at all.
Oh, there always is with like with the Indian movies. Like they always like have like these weird like subplots that don't really have anything to do with the movie.
Like it's just, and I guarantee they're just like famous actors that they shoehorned in the movie.
Oh yeah.
That like if we were watching like a horror movie, like if we were watching like let's say like The Shining, and all of a sudden there's like a subplot with Russell Brand being incredibly annoying and untalented in it.
That'd be amazing.
although the guys in the Indian movies are pretty funny, actually, I will admit. So like I just noticed something about like the Indian movies I was watching, and I'm like, and then like the Indonesian horror movies I've been watching from this year. Like I feel like if you take India and Hong Kong and just ram them together, you get Indonesia. Like as far as their horror is concerned.
That makes sense, actually.
I don't know why, but
I definitely needed to watch better ones because Fergala or Wolf is definitely not my favorite movie of all time.
Watched Queen of Black Magic, the original.
Okay.
It's quite good. Or even watch Ghost with Hole. Yes, the title is called Ghost with Hole. It's not bad. But yeah, that one's pretty good. But I would really recommend Queen of Black Magic. I think that's a really cool one. Or maybe you'll even like The Warrior. Which from 81.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they're all better than probably Primitives, which is another Indonesian one.
Oh, yeah. We watched that one.
It's not horrible, but
it's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fine. That's a 1980. But is there anything else you guys want to talk about? Plug your channel, anything else? Plug your mixtape. I think you have you have some shorts coming out, and I know that Matt has a mixtape. Has that been released yet? I know you have two, maybe.
There's three mixtapes out through Banana Box. There's they're all goofy nonsense. If that sounds fun, then you can pick them up or don't. That's fine too.
We're currently working on a short film compilation of me that is spanning 16 years of the worst shit you've ever seen in your life. But if you buy it when it comes out, it will be going to the MS Society, so it'll be all for a good cause. Sorry for making you watch these abominations.
It's one of those things where it's like, they're all horrible. That's bad. But they go to MS.
Yeah.
It's MS is also bad. That's bad. I appreciate you guys should really go over if you haven't and check out the Sick on Cinema podcast. It's an excellent podcast, very entertaining. They're very funny. They cover all sorts of different movies. And they have a new little kind of like sub thing where they do the mini ones, which is also very good. No, it's one of my favorite podcasts personally. I enjoy it. I laugh a lot. It's just, you guys seem like you guys are enjoying yourself. It's not super scripted, and I like some scripted stuff. It's like, but sometimes it's best just kind of go off the cuff and just like the host and everything like that.
Thank you. we try our best to be dumb.
Yeah. We just want to have fun with it.
Well, I appreciate it coming on here and everything. And I'll probably have you back on for next year if you guys want to come on for 82 or something. I'm trying to keep you guys like movies that are kind of related. I definitely, when the mid to late 80s come, I'll give you guys calls because there's so much Japanese shit that you guys got to come on for.
Oh, yeah.
Straight up.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
Yep, absolutely.
See you guys.
日本付近は引き続き冬型の気圧配置が続いています。このため北海道、東北、北陸など日本海側の地方では雪が降り続き、雪による被害もかなり出ているようです。この方面お出かけの方は十分ご注意ください。太平洋側の各地では晴れているところが多いんですが、ただ関東地方には気圧の谷があり、 午後から雨の降り出したところが多くなっています。ひまわりの写真を見ましても、日本海側はご覧のように白く雲に覆われています。九州、四国など西日本ではよく晴れていますが、関東地方には気圧の谷に伴う雲がこう広く広がっているのが見られます。東京レーダーのスケッチをご覧いただきましても、このように上空の寒気の入り込んだ雨雲が 非常に発達していて、今夜から明日にかけて局地的に大雨となるところもありますのでご注意ください。明日も日本付近は引き続きこの北の冷たいオホーツク海高気圧に覆われるでしょう。日本海側では雪が降り続き、太平洋側では晴れる見込み。